Thank you, Betty. And now, I met Wayne earlier this year, and through the power of Alcoholics Anonymous and identification, he is my sponsor, and it is with honor, and it's a privilege to introduce Wayne.
Wayne, an alcoholic. Isn't that birthday thingy fun? I also want to give a shout out to AJ and Karen. They're both sitting right there. They both are 15 years sober today. I'm just curious which one 13 stepped the other. Seems to be working. All you judgmental people, knock it off. You know, I found out who judges the worst in AA is those who judge those who judge. It's the best. I want to thank Gloria, Don, Peter, and any other person that is responsible for inviting me to come participate in this sober stock. I love AA. I mean, I was out there making a fool out of myself today. I was out there playing volleyball, getting dirty, and I was here last night for that speaker. I'm sober. My sobriety day is November 8th, 1977. I haven't any booze, pills, powders, potions, or lotions that alter my emotions from that day to this. However, rumor has it, I need them. I'm just using defiance to good purpose. Did I mention I love AA? This has been a party. How about it, huh? Ain't this a party? Come on. Man, if you go home from here and you ain't on fire, there ain't one to be lit. That gal who came back for her fifth year, isn't that something? I mean, I go to a lot of these conventions. I go to a lot of them. And rarely do you see the person from the year before back. So it's pretty cool to see the same person back after 5 years and that you continue to come back. I'm reluctant to give you too much attention because it's my turn. I want to thank Jay. Jay's married to Jenna. I want to thank Jay for driving Jenna out here. He's one of them earth people. Don't worry, I'm not going to hurt you. He's one of them normie type guys, you know, one of them. They're healthy and they don't mean to be. They just are. I could get like that, Jay, when I have four Budweisers. It just doesn't stick. Those of you that are in your first year, welcome aboard. Man, it's so much fun to see those of you. I remember when I was new. I remember when I went to my first camp out. My ideas about camping have changed. Now it's no room service. That's my idea of camping out. As the years have gone by, and I've had the privilege to work my butt off to stay sober so that I could have the gift of faith, so many things have transpired in my life that there's no way to compress it into an hour and 15 minutes. It can't be done. Not by me, anyway. Maybe some people can, but I can't. But suffice it to say that it's a requirement of me to talk about my drinking. Because if I don't, I may cheat some newcomer out of identification. Because you're not going to identify with my good stuff. If you are, why are you here? And I also know that the things that I am required to do, not just to stay sober, because I haven't had a drink for a good long time, one day at a time, but that are required of me to maintain my emotional, spiritual balance and to be able to function out there in the earth world where those people are. Because, see, they look at me today and they think I'm normal. They should watch us play volleyball. When I go out there in the earth world and I mix up with those earth people, I am so grateful for AA because one meeting gives me just about enough juice that I can hang with those people for about 8 hours. And they start to wear on me. They're so wonderfully well. No inventories or nothing. Although I think they wouldn't hurt. I do not happen to think we're the... You'll hear this a lot in AA. I've been hearing it a lot lately. For about the last 2 years, I've been hearing it at almost all the conventions I go to. Somebody will remark in one of the alcathons that we are above average intelligent people in AA. Go to an Al-Anon meeting. You won't hear that. Go ask your neighbor how intelligent they think you are. However, I've got papers to prove my dilemma. I'll tell you about that in a minute. So it's important, I think, that I talk about my failure to successfully drink successfully. Some days I fly a lot, and I often get to fly first class. And when I'm up there flying first class, booze is free. And you know, one time I was thinking, booze is free. But you know, for earth people it is. But the price for me to take one free drink in first class will strip me of every good and decent thing about my life today. Because it's not because of me so much. Yes, I've done the work. I don't blow off the work I've done. I take the credit for the work I've done, because if I don't take credit for it, I'll quit doing it. I work my tail off. However, if it wasn't for you guys, you see, there's so much neuroses in my head that I need to see yours so it balances it out. You are the finest group of disturbed people I've seen in a long time. By the way, I was watching you guys play volleyball too, so it ain't one-sided over here. I was walking around getting a feel for things during the day when I wasn't playing volleyball. I was listening to the bands, and I was nosy is what I was. I was eavesdropping on conversations, and what it did was it made me feel so good that I'm a part of this fellowship. Because the big book says we're people who normally would not mix. Bill, that's an understatement. Most of us wouldn't have mixed. We sometimes think we would. But the beauty of AA is if you're new, as I've committed myself to the AA way of life, I have found that place where I fit in AA. And my job is to stay there and make it as good as I can. There's other places where I don't fit in so much. My job is to mind my own business and respect what they do in their group. That's why we have the fourth tradition of autonomy. Each group gets to do what that group wants to do, and every other group should just flat leave them alone, because we're autonomous. It's like no one should come in here. I hope I don't sound like I'm preaching. I don't mean to. I'm making a point. We're a society where we are free to be who and what we really are. And we're inoculated against the idea that we have to conform to a specific pattern and be cookie cutter sober. Ladies and gentlemen, I can't do that. It took me a long time to find out who I am. It took me a long time. It took me even longer to begin to present that character at all times. And it's very difficult sometimes, but I want you to know something. If you follow me around, you'll find out I don't change gears much. What you see is what you get. And it took all of that 34 years to get to a point where I'd be comfortable with that. Now, the reason I'm here tonight is to share my experience. What it used to be like for me, drinking. But for me, it started before I was drinking. Some of you, your problem started when you started drinking. For me, it started when I came out of the chute. I came out, I wanted back in. There was something about that light that I didn't like. I come to find out that I'm dark and negative on a good day. And that's my sponsor says it's because I'm bipolar, because I got my head stuck so far up my ass I can't see daylight. He said someday I'd be walking down 16th Street and I'd hear the loudest explosion I've ever heard. And I said, what's that? He said, it'll be your head popping right out of your ass and you won't be bipolar no more. So I don't know. It's a hell of a cure-all right there in that man. And he says, it looks like you're going to be in there for a while, so you may as well wiggle your ears and enjoy the ride. I hated my sponsor's guts. If you love your sponsor, good for you. I'm happy for you. I hated his guts. I prayed for him to die. I did. I'm not proud of that. I'm just reporting. If you'd have had my sponsor, you'd have prayed for him to die and everybody that was around him too. You'll understand in just a minute. But first I got to tell you, I grew up in an alcoholic home. I'm not going to talk about that too much because you might misinterpret that as my blaming my family, and I'm not. I'm here to report certain circumstances so that a newcomer might identify with me. I was raised in an alcoholic home. I'm the youngest of three kids, two boys and a girl. An alcoholic father by his admission, and a mother who was just very interesting. My mother, God, I wish my mom was alcoholic so you'd have met her. She was something. My mother stood about this big, like 4'11", weighed 160 pounds with no fat, muscle bound. My mother was a bodybuilder. My mother was the first professional female wrestler. My mother was tatted out from the neck down. She had flying eagles tattooed on each forearm, and when she got pissed, they started flying. She had a full double-breasted eagle across her back, and she just loved it. German woman. She loved to beat up men. You know, my dad, he drank that brown whiskey. See, I swore I was never going to drink that brown stuff my dad drank, because my dad would drink a bottle of brown whiskey and beat the hell out of my mom. My mother, in turn, would drink a bottle of tequila. She'd beat the hell out of my dad. And I'd figure out, how can I refill it? When her and my dad drank together, me, Larry, and Sharon went to the basement and locked the door. But I swore I was never going to drink that brown whiskey. I hated my dad for what I saw him do to my mom. I saw what happened to my mom when she drank that tequila. And I couldn't stand what it looked like was happening to my mom because she was drinking a fifth of tequila at a time. I drink Pepsi-Cola. And I've got strange... I was peculiar. I was eating dog bones at the age of 5. My first obsession was milk bone dog biscuits. I know this is AA. I wasn't old enough to drink yet. I was only 5. My dad had this beagle. It was a hunting dog, right? My mother, she's so great. You know, my mom was always baking something. And she would get my dad's beagle these milk bone dog biscuits, right? And I got to tell you the truth. I really liked them. And for like 2 years, she couldn't figure out how that dog was eating all them milk bones. Well, it was me. I was hiding my supply. Pretty soon, my mom figured out what was going on, and so she started hiding them. So I just became a detective. At the age of 8, I'm detecting. Now I'm 9 years old, and it's getting harder to find my milk bones. So I took up grocery shopping with my mom instead of playing wiffle ball with the rest of the boys. I'm grocery shopping at the little corner store in Milan, Illinois. I'm grocery shopping. And you know, do you know they have an aisle dedicated to dog food 50 years ago? Oh, my God. My mother would be over to milk and eggs. You know where they found me? I'm sitting on the ground, on the floor, in the dog food section, eating milk bones out of the box. The store clerk didn't have what it took to do anything about it. Plus, he was afraid I'd bite him. So she quit buying them, I thought. So let's move along a couple of years. Now I'm 12. And I can't find them. And I saw a commercial after Popeye, and it was for the family-sized milk bone. Whoa, man. You got to have one of them. And my mom thought I was out playing. I was hiding behind the couch because I knew she was buying them and not letting me have any. I was really mad at my mom. And so I'm hiding behind the couch, and all of a sudden, I see my dad's dog run out to the kitchen. Oh, them big old ears, you know. You ever seen a beagle? He's trotting out to the kitchen. I think, she's going to give him one. So I hid behind the couch. I swear to God, that dog came through the living room with that family size pitching from his mouth, looking at me like, look what I got. Do you ever think you know what other people are thinking, including dogs? I jumped on that dog before he knew it hit him. I'm giving everything I got to get that milk bone out of his mouth. He won't give it up, so I bit his ear. I've got the lower part of his ear in my mouth. And all of a sudden, I see him dropping a milk bone, and my first thought was, I won! Then he bit me. There's a scar right here, where he actually bit me so hard, my eye came out of the socket. You know I haven't had a milk bone from that day to this. Don't need no sponsor. Don't got to go to one stupid meeting. No milk bone stock, I'll tell you that right now. Never had to go spend a week and never had to work a single step, do a moral inventory or nothing. I just don't eat milk bone. Okay. So now you know what you're dealing with. So I've got problems. I'm acting really weird. I'm biting teachers in school. And you see, I didn't know that alcoholism, for some of us, according to Bill Wilson, have a predisposition. I didn't know that because I'm a dumb kid, and they didn't know nothing about alcoholism 50 years ago, folks. Very little. AA was new. In 1949, when I was born, AA was only 15 years old. 14 years old, actually. So as I'm growing into this, they didn't know what was wrong with me. And how many of us in this room have went to bed at night saying the same thing I said? What's wrong with me? And ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know that I said that after I came to AA, and I said that after I got sober. I know I'm not drinking, but what the hell is wrong with me? I spent many, many nights in between meetings, in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous going, I'm glad for you, Bob. I wish I knew what was wrong with me. And it seems so simple when they tell the story. But I don't, there's something wrong with me that I can't quite put it together. And I go to church. My mom makes us go to church every Sunday, Mountview Free Church. And I'm sitting in the front pew every Sunday. Nothing's registering. I don't understand the thee, the thou, and the whatever for. Mom and Dad don't go to church, but I do. I don't understand that. Not passing no joke, I'm just saying. So now I'm acting weird in school. 1961 or 62, they came out with a new test to test people's intellectual quotient. They thought it was something to do with the emotions as well, so they called it the IQ test. How many of you in this room have taken an IQ test? Play along with Wayne. Come on. Okay. If you've taken an IQ test, I want you to know something. If you score over a 100, you're pretty smart. If you score over a 120, you're really getting there. You score a 150, they will pay you to think. Boy, if they came to this room, they'd be bankrupt. Okay, so. You're Mensa material with an IQ over 150. If you score over a 180, just stay home. You're too smart to drive a car. I want you to know what I scored when I took that test in 1962 and a half. I scored a 57. I didn't cheat. Unlike our Friday night speaker, I got diagnosed mentally retarded. And I got put in a retarded group home, and that's where I stayed until I graduated high school. I rode the short bus for 4 years. Yeah, you bullies know who you are. That did not make me an alcoholic, but it put a definite spin on my personalities. I ain't drinking brown whiskey, and I ain't drinking tequila. I want a Pepsi Cola. So I'm going through school, and you know who the bullies are. Now, I'm not playing the victim card here because, it's my experience, victims don't get to stay sober. Because we're so busy living with one foot in the past and one foot afraid of the future, we have no chance at a hopeful today. And so when I share my past with you, it is not as a victim. It is a person who has overcome the symptoms I'm speaking to. And if I haven't overcome it, I won't share it from the podium until I have. I'll take it to my sponsor, and I'll work a step on it. And then I'll bring the problem with the solution to you. And there's something really wrong with me. They gave me that test. I thought I did pretty good. By the way, it got me out of that crazy insanity of the alcoholic home. But you know, I didn't know what to expect in that group home. And I want you to know something. If you ever lived in a group home, it got bad. That didn't make me alcoholic. Just made life interesting. One weekend on a Friday night, three wrestlers, this is one story, three wrestlers grabbed one of us kids from the special class. I was the only one who was peculiar. The other 11 had Down syndrome that we know. I now know what Down syndrome is. You don't know it when you're in eighth grade. You don't know that's what it is. But I was the only one who had peculiar behavior that got called retarded. I got put in that group home. These wrestlers locked three of us special kids, each one in a locker on Friday night, and they didn't find us till Monday. They spent the weekend with the police looking for us. They found us by the urine on the floor. That did not make me alcoholic. But when I got to AA, I had to deal with you bullies here. That's the truth. I had to be okay with you. I'll get into that later. That was under step four, resentment. Guy named Tom found out who those three wrestlers were, and he beat the living hell out of them. Tom became my hero, didn't he? And Tom became my protector through school. I tell you that because I've always looked for something stronger than me to provide the power I needed that I seemed to lack. And I seemed to lack the needed power to live out there on my own. You hear me? When I'm with Tom, I don't feel that gut-wrenching fear and powerlessness I feel. By the way, I didn't have these words till I met you guys. See, I've been through therapy since I was 12. I'm a project. I'm a project that lived in the project. You know what I'm saying? So Tom protected me. I'm graduating now. By the way, I want you to understand something. I never read a book. We didn't read in the special class. The reason I am well read is because I have a sponsor who's evil. He doesn't care how I feel. He says you can't solve a feeling. He said it isn't that I don't care about your feelings. It's just there is no solution for a feeling. There's only a solution for a problem. But can I talk to somebody else? I'll tell you about what he did when I get sober. I didn't understand what was going on with me. But Tom protected me throughout that school. And I'm the only one from the special class that got to go to the senior dance. He dressed me all up. By the way, I'm dressed pretty good tonight, but it's not because of me. My sponsees do real good at telling me, this is green, isn't it? Yeah. Real men don't wear green? Well, tonight you got one. So, where's I going with that? Every now and then I go on excursions. We call it Wayne's World. I'll come back. I'm the only one in the special class that got to the senior dance. Why is this significant? Because I've not had a drink of alcohol. I drink Pepsi-Cola. I'm not drinking brown whiskey, not drinking tequila, because I see the bad effects in my family. But I don't know that it's alcohol. I don't know how it works. I don't know how it's related. And why would I? Tom took me to senior dance. I'm standing up against the wall, and I'm watching these seniors, and there's a few junior girls that got invited by the senior boys. And I don't know what to do. I'm scared to death. This is the first time I've been in the regular school away from the other kids and the short bus. And we play putt-putt. That's what we do. We play a lot of putt-putt. Every day we play putt-putt. Tom comes walking up on me, and he opens up his jacket, and he brings out this brown bottle. It's not Pepsi-Cola. It's got a red, white, and blue label. Budweiser. Moment of silence. Okay. He said, here, kid, drink this. It'll make you feel better. I want you to know something. I would have drank battery acid for that man. You hear me? I didn't know I was a guzzler. I didn't. I took that whole bottle of Budweiser, and before I could taste it, it was at the bottom of my stomach and coming back. And I let out a big old belch, and I said, Tom, I'll never forget it. Tom, that tastes terrible. I want a Pepsi-Cola. Tom said something to me I'll never forget. He said, that's okay, kid. Have another. You'll get used to it. Now, I want you to know what Tom meant. See, Tom is a friend of mine today. Tom has never been drunk more than once in his life. That first time got his attention. He's never been drunk by his mouth to my ear in all these years. Here's what happened to Tom. Tom got into his dad's booze, got his judgment impaired, because that happens to anybody who drinks if they drink too much. He got disorientated, had to go to the bathroom, thought he was in the bathroom. He was actually in the bedroom, peed in his dresser, and then almost went insane trying to flush it. And his mother does not need Al-Anon. He made him do his laundry. And he said, I'll never do that again. And that's what he meant when he said I would get used to it. You see, Tom is one of those drinkers that can drink safely. One of them earthly people types. See, me, somewhere between 4 and 5 Budweisers that night, I got so damn good looking, I couldn't stand it. I went from 120 pounds and retarded to 240 pounds with an IQ of 240. Now, I don't know this is happening. It's just happening. And I look out on the dance floor, and I spotted her. Sort of like two newcomers meeting across the hall. I saw this blue-eyed blonde dancing with some loser. I don't know. I play putt-putt. I never talked to a girl. But I'd overheard someone say, can I cut in? So I'm a word stealer. Anybody else? I'm a word stealer. So I was so taken by this blue-eyed blonde, I walked right up to her and I said, hi, can I cut in? And she goes, sure. She recognized me from the retarded class. So she gave me a sympathy dance. And then she gave me another sympathy dance. And by God, she started liking me. And we found out later that night, sex meant two people. I didn't know that. We weren't getting sex ed in the special class. They didn't want to give us a single clue on how to reproduce. Tom told me the next day I had a great time. I remember parts of it. It ruined my sex life. Been having sex since I was 13. I thought I was good at it. She complicated the entire process. I felt worse after we were done than we started. I'll tell you that right now. This is work. It's a good thing I was retarded. I'll tell you that. We go back to class, and, you know, we got a couple more months before graduation. You know, in a few weeks before graduation, Tom came, got me out of the special class and took me down to the principal's office because the principal wanted to see me, and I didn't know why. Because I play putt-putt. And sitting in the principal's office is my mom and dad. Now, my dad's a whiskey-drinking, barroom, brawling truck driver. He runs illegal cigarettes and whiskey out of Chicago. My mother, the professional lady killer, they don't go to PTA. But I'm retarded, so I don't know why they're there. Then I look to my left, and there's Bonnie. Didn't know I was going to need freedom from blondage. And then after I saw her, I saw what turned out to be her mom and dad. Now, yeah, don't get ahead of me. This was a bad moment in my life. I opened that door, and Tom, he kept walking. He says, I'm not going in there. He says, kid, you're on your own on this one. He seemed to know what the problem was. I walked in there, and her dad's mouth was attached to the doorknob. Because as soon as I opened that door up, he come out of his chair, and he's screaming bloody murder. Are you the boy that has sex with my daughter? And I looked right at her, and I said, yeah. I misinterpreted his anger, and I said, and I want to do it again. He lost his mind. He said, look, you, my daughter's pregnant, and she's 16. You're 17. That's statutory rape, and you're going to go to prison for 20 years. And I said, even if you're retarded? We got married. Back in 1968, mothers didn't let their pregnant daughters go unmarried, even if the guy is retarded. So they drove us to Palmyra, Missouri, where you can marry your cousin. You know, I was in Kansas City once, and I thought I was in Kansas City, Kansas. I was in Kansas City, Missouri. They didn't take too kindly to that comment. We got married. My dad helped me join the Navy. Went to Vietnam. Probably saved my life. Came back from Vietnam. And we got divorced. And I drank for the second time. Now see, if you're new, I want you to know it's not about how much you drink. It's not about how long you drink. According to our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it's about what alcohol does to and for me, and the fact that I just can't stop when I want to and have to, that makes me alcoholic. I went a full 15 months without another drink. When we got divorced, I went and had another drink, and I blacked out for 5 days. I didn't even know what a blackout was, folks. All I know is I'm driving a car, and I've swore, after seeing what happens in my family, I am never going to commit adultery. I am never cheating on a woman. Never. And I want you to know, and I don't pass no judgment on people who do, but from that day to this day, I've never done that, just because it's the one thing that keeps my sanity. I just swore I'd never do that. I saw what it did to my mom. I'm not doing that, no matter what. But here's my problem. I'm driving a car. I'm divorced. I look to my right, and there's a girl over there. And I don't know who she is. Have you ever come out of a blackout and not known where you are or who you're with? Kind of interesting, isn't it? And I'm looking like over here. See, I'm wondering who she is. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to put things together. And she interrupted me. She says, "Honey, what's the matter?" And I looked at her and I said, "Who are you?" She hit me. Right there. I said, "What the hell's the matter with you? Who are you?" You know, you ladies, you don't take kindly when you're asked who you are on your honeymoon. Apparently, I got drunk, blacked out, and we drove to Palmyra, Missouri. Same place I got married the first time. I do not go to Palmyra, Missouri anymore. That's the second time I drank. It's downhill from there. So I went back to Vietnam. It worked the first time. But she wouldn't get rid of me. She figured because of what happened, it must be God's will. By the way, if anybody new comes to me and they want to talk about God's will, we're going to have a conversation. Because usually my fingerprints look like God's will. I came back in Vietnam the second time. My mind is deranged. Vietnam didn't do that to me. It only compounded the fracture that was already coexisting inside me to start with. I had no idea about what was wrong with me. All I know is when I drink, something about me changes. There's no words for it unless you read the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And the words Dr. Silkworth used, an abnormal reaction. That I drink because of the effect produced. And it is so powerful, this effect produced, that alcoholics of my type, no matter what, will take a drink. No matter what the cost, no matter what the penalty, I will find some flimsy reed of idea why it's okay for me to take a drink. Faced with disaster. And I did that to the point where my second wife left me. My father took me to court, got me a restraining order on me. I could not go near my wife. I could not go near my own kids. I could not go near my own mother. I'm not going to tell you why. That's for a different location. That's not appropriate from up here. But it was justified, though I didn't think so. And so I couldn't go near any of my family. And I'm out on the street, and I can't even believe now. I can't even believe what's happening to me. I've served 2 tours of duty in Vietnam. I've got medals. I've got a presidential citation. How can this be? I'm living in a dumpster. You hear me? Behind Larry's Oasis is a BFI. One night I hear a knock on the dumpster lid, and I was home. You wouldn't have recognized me then tonight. Let me describe myself for you. We were 6'3", weighed 146 pounds. What teeth I had left were rotted. You know, when I got sober, I almost died from poison, from the broken teeth that my gums had healed over. I'm not trying to gross you out, but when you live on Skid Row the way I did, I was foul-mouthed, not just verbally. I was sick. Weighed 146 pounds. My body had sores. I've got long hair. Believe it or not, I got a ponytail. I'm home alone. You know, I would try to get a date. And every now and then they were so drunk they couldn't tell that it was my teeth that were bad. And I could get them to the front door, but I just could not close the deal. They weren't getting in that dumpster. You girls are so particular. You gotta lower your standards just a little more. My curiosity got to me. I'm wondering who's out there. And I lift up the lid. Can you believe who's out there? It's my dad. The very man who took me to court, the very man who told me next time he sees me, he's going to put a bullet through my brain and put me out of my pathetic misery. And my dad meant it. Some of you guys know these guys. My dad was the guy that he told you, if you do that again, I'm going to knock you on your butt. And then no more warnings. If you did it again, he knocks you on your butt. 10 years could pass. Same rule. I honor that. My dad was a man of his word. I just didn't necessarily like how he put his word. The last thing my dad said to me is if I go near my kids, my wife, or my mother, that he will shoot me. So I'm looking for the pistol. You know, there's a part of me, and if you've lived like I've lived, and I know many of you have, I was hoping he had a pistol because I couldn't take it anymore. And instead, when I looked in my dad's eye, I saw something I never saw before. I saw a look in his eye that baffled me. Because the last time I saw him, it was dark and evil in there. He had a look that I can only comprehend now. Because I know what it is. I have experience. My father had gone off and joined this cult. It's called AA. You know, they have hand signs. He looked down at me and he said, Wayne, do you want to come home with me tonight? He was paying a 12-step call on me, wasn't he? Apparently, someone in his home group told him, okay, Frank, we listened to you enough about your kid. Because we don't work so well with our own kids. But I guess he aggravated him enough that they finally gave in and said, okay, try it once. But you know what? If he resists at all, leave or you'll screw it up for us. You know, when he said, Wayne, do you want to come home? I looked around my little room. And I said, no, thanks, Dad. I'm doing fine. And if you've been where I've been, you know that was the truth. I was doing fine. There's no conflict where I'm living. No problems. Nobody to pester you. All you got to worry about is what time the pickup man's coming. As soon as I said, no thanks, Dad, I'm doing fine, he left. I figured he wasn't sincere. He might have given me $20 or something, and then I maybe thought he was sincere, but he left because that's what they told him to do. I figured he went to get the gun. And I don't know, maybe I guess that little spark of hope was still in there, like it is in most of us that make it. Because when my dad left, I thought he's going to get the gun. And I stayed around there for a little bit, hoping he was going to come back and put me out of my misery because I didn't have what it takes to do it myself. And booze. The beauty of booze is the beast as well. It takes so long. And it kills everybody around you first. That is the true beauty in the beast, isn't it? The bottle of booze that I worshipped and held on to and gave up everything for. And I didn't even know why till I met you guys. I bailed out of that dumpster that night because I didn't want to die. But I'm hungry. I'm not alcoholic. I've got mental issues. Anybody else? I mean, no, never mind. Don't raise your hand on that. I have issues. I've been psychiatrically institutionalized 17 times. I know I don't look like it. Unless you're watching volleyball. You know, my mom and dad court committed me. They said they did it because they loved me. I told my mom, please don't love me so much. But something happened while I was in there, and I self-signed in 15 more times. What happened was psychosober civil happened. I saw her across the ward. She didn't have a sponsor. I fell in love. And I'm trying to work my mojo on the psych ward. You know, Given the way I looked, the way I smelled, the way I drank, and the way I acted out on the street, I couldn't get a date to save my life. But you put me in a co-ed psych ward. I'm a pretty charming fella. Until the nurses get a hold of me. Remember one time they where I was at, they bring the med cart right out on the floor, and then they line you up like little ducks with paper cups, and they give you your pills, and you take them, right? Well, I spotted Psycho Sober Sybil at the head of the line. I thought, she's taking Thorazine. Here's my shot. She'll take her Thorazine, I'll time it, and then I'll catch up. Because she may not like me, but she can't outrun me. See, when you're on a psych ward, they can't hold that thinking against you. Sort of like being in a retarded class. So I line up all the way at the back, and I'm making a plan. I've got a plan. I'm making a plan, putting a plan in. Anybody else have a plan when they were new? Anybody new? Anybody new tonight that's got a plan? What we mean by a plan is we think, you know what you need to do, and it don't look nothing like what we think you ought to do. I'll tell you about my plan in a minute. But I had a plan, put it in the application, and I watched her take her pills, and I looked at the clock on the one. Oh, about 22 minutes. I got a crack at this one. And I go through the line because I'm trying to be a duck. And she fills my cup, and I take them, and I don't even realize I'm taking Thorazine. And just as I get ready to bust a move, it kicked in. And I see that she sees me coming, and she goes like this. And the nursing staff is like this. Go get him there, Tiger! Yeah! By the way, AA can be a lot like that at times. Girls, those of you in your first year, I saw you when you stood up. There's a dance tonight, right? I just want to let you know, if I come up to you during that dance, or someone like me, and says something like this, we might even posture a bit. Say, hey, would you like to go have coffee and talk about God? If I do that, run! There was a lot wrong with me. I clumb out of that dumpster and I made that walk of walks that every man and woman in this room has made. You may not have made it from a dumpster. Maybe you started your walk from that Cadillac you parked on the front porch. Or that closet you hope they don't find you in. Or that carpet you're stuck to. You hear me? Or that naked body sprawled out in the center of the living room. Or the front yard, however close you can get. See, bottom is relative to the imagination of the individual, isn't it? Now, I also want to add this. If you're sitting there, and if you thought this thought, I never did that. That alone qualifies you for AA. Because I'll bet you Jay has not sat there yet and thought, oh boy, sure glad I never done that. But they go like this. They don't ever think, well, I never done that. That just doesn't tend to cross their flipping mind. As I'm walking, it's about 2 in the morning, and I passed Harvey's Restaurant at the foot of 34th Street and 4th Avenue in Moline. It's an all-night mom-and-pop coffee shop. Remember those coffee shops? Some of you older folk like me, they stayed open all night for truck drivers. Cost a nickel or a dime for a cup of coffee. Remember those with the malt shop stools that were moving? That way, if you were drunk, no one knew for sure. It was one of those little joints. And I looked inside the window, and I saw this 800-year-old woman slowly wiping down the coffee bar. I sized her up, knew I could work her, because I'm a worker among workers. I don't have an alcohol problem. I've got specific diagnoses. I have issues. But I only drink beer. So I'm not an alcoholic. Oh, I drink fine wine, too. Like Ripple. How many of you remember Ripple? No, how many of you have drank Ripple? Okay, if you're under the age of 40, you never had Ripple. Because the EPA closed that chemical plant down. Ripple never saw a grape. It had a picture of a grape on the flipping label. That's as close as you got to a grape. Now I like Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. You know why I like Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill? I like Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill because I'm a puker. And because I have false teeth, I'm a projectile puker. And when I puke, it looks like I'm bleeding internally. And so I start telling people I'm dying from stomach cancer to get a free drink. And I also like little Mad Dog Doocy Doocy. Now I want you to know something here. Where the hell are we, Odessa? Okay. I want to tell you about a condition you may or may not have heard about in Odessa, Florida. It's what you get when you drink Budweiser, Boone's Farm, Ripple, and Mad Dog. It's called alcoholic terminal diarrhea. I swear before God, I had diarrhea for 6 years. When you've had diarrhea for 6 years, you better have good decision-making skills. And you better have split-second timing. And I always got confused about the two. But I'm not an alcoholic. I walked in that restaurant. My odor hit her before my eyes did. She really was 80 years old. And she slowly, she looks up and she sees me and she lit up, which confused me. I was ready to leap into action. I'm going to work her. I'm hungry. She looks at me. This smile crosses her face. She almost runs up to me, sets me down a glass of water, brings over a hot cup of water and some Heinz tomato ketchup for me to make soup. And she says, "What can I do for you, sweetie?" I'm getting worked. So I went into action. Told her about the alcoholic home. Told her about the brutality. Told her about the abuse. Told her about the marriage and the kid and Vietnam and the marriage and Vietnam and the dumpster. Tears, alligator tears are rolling down her face. And I decide I'd better hurry up and cry to her. She won't believe me. So I made myself cry. I'm crying, she's crying, and I have no idea I'm losing. I found out later she wasn't crying because of my story. She was crying, she'd heard it before 1,000 times. She was in a program called Al-Anon. As a side note, I think it's only fair that you Al-Anon should wear a badge warning us non-alcoholics. Her husband, Harvey, was having trouble staying sober. I want you to hear this because it's important. It's getting lost in AA these days. She realized her husband, Harvey, was having trouble staying sober, and she knew if he had a sick new one to work with, he might have a chance. So unbeknownst to me, she took me hostage, gave me a job mopping and waxing the floors. 3 days later, Harvey shows up. This started on the night of October 31st, 1972. And on November 2nd, 1972, Harvey comes in. Harvey's a man that stands this big, and he is so ugly, made me feel good about myself. He had a nose that was straight with golf balls. And his face had these red and black and blue veins running through it. I didn't know that then, but I now know it's called spider angioma, and it's late-stage fatal alcoholism. I swear when Harvey's nose, when his heart beat, his nose went like this. Man, I got no teeth, but I got no nose like that neither. Isn't it funny how an alcoholic who lives in the gutter can reach up just far enough to judge a successful businessman? Harvey shakes my hand, and he puts a coin in it. I know it's too big to be anything spendable. Because you know, you learn. And he says, hi, my name's Harvey. I think I can help you. And I opened up my hand and it had this brass coin, said had these two A's on it. And I didn't get it. He says, turn it over. You know how glib they are. I read it. He said, read it. I read it. It said, God grant me. But it didn't say nothing about money, food, shelter, or pell-mell tailor-made cigarettes. So I informed him I wasn't interested in that. He said, of course you're not. Now, take that coin. Do you know how they talk right through you like they're not listening? Have you ever noticed? They don't even seem to care you have a response. He said, now, you take that coin tomorrow down to 410 16th Street about noontime. Go meet some friends of mine. You tell them Harvey sent you. They're going to help you. I heard money, food, shelter. So when you get there, look into the cellarway because they're in the basement. Boy, it took us years to get out of the basement, folks. He says, you look down there and there'll be a light bulb hanging on a cord. He said, if that light's on, go in. They're there. If he'd have told me I was going to AA, I would have never went because I only drink beer. And I've got enough psychiatric diagnoses to make any argument you want me to make. He knew that, how clever these old timers are. He didn't tell me I was going to AA. He led me to believe I was getting a handout. I went down there the next day about noontime to get what I got coming. I get there and I see the light bulb hanging on the cord in the basement. And Harvey said it was on, go in, but it wasn't on. It was flickering. Stop! I'm out there doing aerobics. By the way, if you see someone doing that, they're not having a fit, they're thinking. They're having a think fart. It wouldn't stop blinking. So I went crazy and left. I couldn't take it. I went down to Larry's Oasis, mooshed me a few Budweisers. And I didn't know what a slipper was. I'm not in AA yet, right? But a couple of guys at Larry's Oasis are slippers, I found out, because I'm at the bar telling Larry about this place I'd just been, and these guys were familiar. And they really primed me up. They said, you know, they owe you. You go back there right now, and you tell them what they owe you. And I'm, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So me and my bony ass, we went back there about 8 o'clock that night. I don't even look for the light because I don't care if it's on or gone. I'm going in because they owe me. These guys said so. I went and charged the basement doorway and failed to notice that the door header's 5'10"-ish. I'm 6'3"-ish. With a full head of steam, I cracked that door header with my eyebrow. The impact lifted me off of my feet, and I swear to God, I slid into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am literally bouncing along the floor, and I land between these two old farts. They were sitting with four or five other guys around a round table. They had round tables so the devil couldn't corner you. I slid right between two of them. And this old, crusty, mean, evil, God should have killed him a long time ago, man, got up out of his chair and stood over me and went just like this. And then he growled at me. They used to growl at you. He goes like this. Slide right in here, you big dummy. He says, we got a wrench to fit every nut that comes in the door. And he says, by the looks of you, it's going to have to be an adjustable wrench. I ain't liking him right away. And then he says, my name's Barney. I didn't ask, don't care. And then he said something that blew my mind. He said, I'm an alcoholic. Well, I'm ADD. I'm personality, character disorder, borderline personality. You only got one problem? And then he says that I'm going to be your sponsor. Now we're getting somewhere. Because I played softball for Larry's Oasis. And he sponsored us. He paid our league fees. He paid our travel expenses. And he brought the free beer. Yes! That is a misinterpretation. And I got up off that floor because I thought I was going to get something free from this guy. And I want to tell you, I met the meanest, god-awful man you ever saw in your entire life. He said what he meant, and he meant what he said, and he didn't care what other people around him thought when he said it to me. He wasn't worried about the gossip and the character assassination and the judgment that we profuse on people. He didn't care. He told me the truth. That man saved my life. Now, one minor caveat, I didn't stay sober. I drank for the next 5 years. I could not drink. It wasn't because I wasn't working a program. Because I didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. I didn't know how to accept the treatment and apply it to my life because I didn't know what was wrong with me. You see, booze ain't my problem. And I've had people tell me, if you don't drink so much, you'll be okay. Don't mix it with that wine stuff. Because you see, I didn't get drunk every day. You see, I'm a feelings person. I think with my feelings. I never drank every day. I just drank when I felt like it. I felt like it a lot. Something wrong with me inside. I'm broken and I don't understand it. But I followed Barney around for 4.5 years. I can't even tell you how vile I thought he was. I want to tell you, I now know he never yelled at me one time. It just sounded like he was, because he was yelling. But what I come to find out, he was just trying to raise his voice to get above the noise in my head. You see, he knew because he had a noise in his head. And he knew the noise in my head was denying me the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So don't make fun of people the way they sponsor. It may not save you, but it might save the person that they sound like they're yelling at when they're really not yelling at them. They're just trying to get above their head. Now, the naysayers will say that's justification. That's the truth. Because I have chaos in my head. And he was able to override that chaos with his own experience with chaos. Isn't that something? For the next 4.5 years, I went to meetings almost every day with these guys. And I could not drink. I could not imagine my life without just, come on, I just want one Budweiser. It's just Budweiser. And when the psychiatric pills wouldn't work, I'd drink more. I was taking, it's an outside issue, but that's the truth. I'm taking so many psychiatric medications, and I'm drinking. I'm just a mess. And 4.5 years going to meetings, I can't take it no more. I walk into a meeting, I walk in late, right in front of the speaker, like most slackers like I am do. And my sponsor's sitting right there where you are, Jay. You're much more polite to him, I might add. I walked right in front of Barney, and I heard him yell out, "Dummy!" I found out later he whispered. He said, "Do you know this program tends to work better if you don't drink?" I've been going to meetings for 4.5 years. I never heard that. I heard him say, "Don't drink no matter what." By the way, watch who you say that to. Might be a guy like me. We don't say that. Nowhere in the book does it say, "Don't drink no matter what." The book is more loving than that. The book says we can't drink alcohol in any amount at all, in any form at all, safely. But what I heard Barney say was, "Don't drink no matter what." And I pulled a pistol out of my boot and I pointed it at my sponsor's face and I fired a round off. I'm not proud of that moment in my life, but that's what I did. Barney, I missed him 6 inches high. They say if Barney would have been 6 foot tall, he'd be 6 foot under. I came to the next morning at Franciscan Mental Health Center in Rock Island, Illinois. My 17th trip to the psych ward, I was black and blue from head to toe from little AA group therapy. Hell, I thought they'd be glad I missed. I was strapped down in 6-point leather restraints to a steel bed in the center of a padded room. I wasn't going nowhere. And they had me and they told me so. And about 10 o'clock that next morning, Nurse Ratchet came in. She goes, "Just like this, we got you. That'll send a shiver up your spine. We got you. And I got to tell you, I don't know why, you sure don't deserve it, but you have a visitor." I said, "A visitor? I mean, I'm restrained. I ain't going nowhere. And I can't chew through the straps." I said, "Who's out there?" So she brought him in. You know who it was? Barney. Couldn't get rid of him for nothing. I mean, come on! He's walking around my little bed, pointing things out. Whoa, those look broke. And he says, dummy? I said, yes, sir. He said, there's something wrong with you. What's your clue? He said, I don't even know if you're alcoholic. You might just be nuts. And I didn't like being talked to like that. So I threatened him in 6-point letter restraints. He said, that won't help. And then he says, you know what, dummy? I said, yes, sir. He says, if they ever let you out of here, and I'm not sure they're going to, they're talking about keeping you and studying you a while. You really done it this time. And then Alcoholics Anonymous took him over. He looks at me and he says, however, if they do let you go, if you will come with me and our group and do what we did and still do, even you can recover. See, that's the Alcoholics Anonymous I know. I don't know this judgmental Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know that Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know that gossip Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know the character assassination Alcoholics Anonymous. I only know that Alcoholics, where I had every right to be judged, condemned, and kicked out. And the man himself came and said, you come with me. And he got me out of there, as a matter of fact. And kudos to you guys that do H&I, because he does H&I at that very hospital twice a week. He knew every psychiatrist there. And he convinced them to release me to him. And guess where he wanted to go? A meeting. Can I wash the ashtrays? See, back then it was the ABCs were ashtrays, brooms, and chairs. And to make a long story short, because I'm about out of time, I don't know why I was compelled to tell that much of my story here, but I've had so much fun today, and it's sort of a homey atmosphere, isn't it? And it's very important, I think, we need to know that no one in this room is above judgment. No one. If there's a person in this room that hasn't committed a sin or an error in judgment or mistake this past year, then you'd probably be, it'd be right for you to judge. You'd be righteous. But you know, AA is a place where our asset is our colossal failure. That's our asset. You see, some people think I'm funny. No, you identify. So if you've laughed, you're really sick. I got about 10 minutes left, maybe 15. November 8th, I took what appears to be my last drink, and I share it that way because there's no guarantees. I stay away from people who say they're never drinking again. Not that I'm judging them, I'm protecting myself. Because if I start thinking I'm going to stay sober the rest of my life, that's about the time I'll pick up a drink, because there's no guarantees. We have a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition, my maintenance and growth according to the 12 and 12. What happened on November 8th, I want to tell you about that because I don't think anybody knows for sure when they're going to get to stay sober and stay sober. It's up to God. It's not up to me. On November 7th, my sponsor says to me, dummy, I said, yes, sir. He says, you think you can stay sober tonight, meet me tomorrow for the noon meeting and help me set up? And I said, no, I can't. I can't stay sober the rest of my life. He said, no, wait. I had him for a second. I said, no. He says, no. Can you stay sober just tonight? I'm not asking you to quit drinking. Just don't drink tonight. Meet me tomorrow. I said, Barney, I can't. Can't go the rest of my life without a drink. He goes like this. Okay. Now I know what I'm dealing with. Can you make it till midnight? I said, well, anybody can do that. So I made it till 7 a.m. I rolled up through Belgian Village, walked when I say rolled up through, and stole a six-pack of warm Budweiser, and I went to the noon meeting early to meet him there because I told him I would. And I want to tell you about my bottom and how lame it really is. And yet it's mine. I'm sitting on the front steps of my home group at 10 a.m. waiting for the noon meeting, drinking a six-pack of warm Budweiser. And I hadn't been drunk for a few days. I'm not an everyday drinker. I just suffered this untenable emotion, this depression, this sadness, this feeling of being separate, different, alone until I can't take it no more, and then I drink. And so I'm sitting on the front steps. And I got three empty cans on the ground, three in my lap, every intention to drink them. And all of a sudden, here comes Barney. He walks up on me, and he doesn't look at the beer. Instead, he looks me in the eye, causing me to notice the beer. And he said, dummy. I said, yes, sir. why don't you come in and help me set up for the meeting? I said, I'll be right in. He went in, and I thought I better go in. So I hid the other three cans of beer in the bush because I might need them during the meeting. You never know who's going to share. Big book, Bob. It's in the book. It's in the book. It's in the book. It's in the book. You need a drink, Bob. It's in the book. It's in the book. Is that in the Bob? So I went and helped Barney set up for the meeting. And while I'm setting up for the meeting, is this being recorded? Who's recording it? How much time I got left? 10 minutes? Go ahead, check, because I don't want to run over your CD.
You're not going to run over.
I'm not. Oh, cool. You guys got 10 minutes left in you?
Yeah.
Okay. Where was I at? I'm Wayne. I'm an alcoholic. So I noticed that Tom, the newcomer, Tom's got 14 days. Now, every group's got one of these Toms. Tom's got 14 days, and he asked Barney to sponsor him. Now, Barney's been my sponsor for 5 years and 5 days. And I've noticed he isn't paying as much attention to me as he used to, like for the last 14 days. And I want Tom to die. See, Tom didn't help us set up for the meeting because he's at the coffee bar working the staff. Look, Barney. Tom needs to die. So I'm sitting at the rounder table. You know, Tom's that guy. I have, Barney's my sponsor, and I have 4 days. So I sit down in the AA shoebox, because they won't let me sit with the new people. The AA, by the way, you're not considered new when you've been sleeping for 5 years. You're in the shoebox. You know where that's where they put the AA sneakers, slippers, runners, and loafers. So we don't infect the serious ones. So I'm sitting in the shoebox, and I'm watching Barney up at the coffee bar talking to Tom, his new favorite. Tom's working the steps. And like from nowhere, the front door flies open. And this drunk, I mean, he's drunk. You can smell him the minute he came in the room. I'm not drunk. I'm having a lucid interval. I've been to meetings for 5 years and 5 days, and I've not one time said I'm an alcoholic, because I know once you say that, you joined. So I have not, I said, you know, I'm borderline personality problem. I've got character disorder. I've got attention deficit something. But I ain't an alcoholic. I never once said I'm an alcoholic for 5 years and 5 days. This guy comes flying in. We think his wife did a drive-by. Because he come flopping in, and nobody came in behind him. And he flopped like a beach carp right there. And I looked at Barney. Barney's with Tom. And all of a sudden, him and Tom both noticed the guy hit the floor. And I'm thinking, uh-oh. If Barney gets him, it's two against one. I'm going to have to kill two people. I didn't know what to do, so I lit out of the shoebox. And I went up to this guy, and I got to him before Barney could get off his stool. And I lifted him up off the ground. He was so drunk, he couldn't see how bad a shape I was in. I pulled him up, but I don't know what to say. I ain't talked to nobody in AA for 5 years. I just picked him up, and I thought, what the hell do I say? Barney's going to come get him. If I don't say something, I got to say something pretty quick. I got to get him before Barney does. And so I said, hi, my name's Wayne B. He goes like this. And I said, got it. My name's Wayne B, and I'm an alcoholic. I didn't mean to say that. What do you know? I took a newcomer to get it out of me. And then I, well, what the hell, I done joined. I might as well go all the way. And I said, and I'm going to be your sponsor. Barney heard that. Soon as he heard that, he abandoned Tom. He left him sitting in the dust. And I thought, if I knew that's all it took, I'd have sponsored somebody 13 days ago. Now Barney's heading right for me, and I know he's going to poach my newcomer. I've already taken possession. We'll call him Jimmy, because that's his name. I pulled Jimmy behind me so Barney couldn't get him. Because he's mine. Barney comes up, he comes that far from my face. And he whispers in my ear, dummy. And I'm thinking, talk to me like that in front of my sponsee. You'll never respect me. In that split second, he had my life in his hands. He knew it. I didn't know that. He held my life in his hands. He could have said, get away from him. You ain't even sober yourself. You got 3 hours. But he knew Jimmy didn't know that. Could you imagine? I tell you, I don't mean no disrespect, but I'm glad this happened to me 34 years ago. I'll tell you why. Given the insular droppings in AA that have nothing to do with our program, it's denying so many of us that are new the chance to work with somebody newer because we don't think we're ready. Could you imagine what they might tell Bill? Remember, Bill Wilson took his last drink on December 11, 1934. For 6 months, he talked to drunks. None of them stayed sober. He thought he was failing. It took his wife to throw offhandedly, but Bill, you're sober. Yeah, that deserves music. But how long you had that phone? Okay, don't pay no attention. He'll do it again. Where was I at? What? Could you imagine what we tell Bill today? Bill, the reason you're not staying sober is because you haven't worked the steps you haven't wrote yet. Bill, you got to study the big book as soon as you write it. Bill, you can't sponsor Dr. Bob. You've only got 6 months. Bob, you can't sponsor Bill D. You've only got 3 weeks. That's the crap you'd hear today. But you know what? Dr. Bob did sponsor Bill D with 3 weeks. Bill W. did sponsor Dr. Bob with 6 months. Because that's when God was still in charge. You hear me? So you know what Barney whispered to me? He says, dummy? I said, yes, sir. Do you think I could co-sponsor him? No. I ain't had no co-sponsor. He's mine. That's what I thought. What I said was okay. Barney was a genius. He says to me and Jimmy, if you two clowns expect to stay sober. Now what Barney told me was he doesn't know you haven't worked the steps. Work step one, then work it with him. Recovery begins when one alcoholic talks to another. There's no flipping time limit. When one sick alcoholic starts talking to another, recovery begins. Do you hear me? I don't ever want to forget that. He told me and Jimmy, if you two clowns expect to stay sober, and I doubt if you will, get out there and start grabbing newcomers now. Grab them. I'm literal. I'm anal. I put my hands on people. I grabbed them. I remember I was sitting in a meeting one time and Jimmy had one more sponsee than me. And I told Jimmy, next one through the door is mine. You move, you die. And he knows I meant it. So he said, okay, it's your response. This guy comes walking in the back door and he's got this. That deer in the headlight look, and I thought, whoa, he's got to be raw. And all of a sudden, something went off inside me. And I went, and I meant to shake his hand, but I actually grabbed him by the throat. And me and my bony butt lifted him up against the wall. And I said exactly this, listen, asshole! I ain't got no teeth yet. If you want what I got, you got to do what I did. Because I heard that somewhere. He goes just like this. You ain't got a goddamn thing I want. Let me go. I said, okay, let go and let God. I'll be here when you get back. He had 11 years. He was having a bad day. You know, last November 8th, me and Jimmy both celebrated 34 years. I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, so I turned my will and my life over to AA. I have a new employer, and I try to perform His work as well as I can. And since I know who my new employer is, I don't allow anybody else to change my mind about who my new employer is. And in the past 34 years, with all the human mistakes that I've made, with all of the errors in judgment and all of the things, what happens is I appear to be a different man today than I was 34 years ago, but I think it's important to tell the newcomers I'm not really a different man. I'm just the man that I was meant to be to the best of my ability today. And I found out who I am. And I want to wrap it up with this. I think this is most important. We've had some fun tonight. We've talked about the sick side, and I think we've talked about the recovery side, haven't we? On how Barney treated me. God, I wish I had more time. There's so many funny stories to bring Barney back to life for a little while. I talk about Barney a lot because he passed away on April 17, 2002. And there's not a day goes by I don't think about him. There's not a day goes by I don't miss him. There's not a day goes by I don't try to emulate him in some way. The man that I hated, that I prayed would die, became a master musician. He was able to, he played me like a fine instrument. And I would have, you know, I just want to share this with you. Like I told you, I'm not exaggerating at all when I tell you I never read a book. I played putt-putt. I had no vocabulary except street language. And my sponsor says, until you can find that F word in the big book, I don't want to hear it from the podium ever again. I will not sponsor you if you're going to use the F word from the podium. And he says, but I know that's the only word you know, so we're going to give you some new words. He says, if anybody in AA tells you it's okay to use the F word, you feel free to ask them to sponsor you. I'm okay with that. I'm not judging. He was trying to change my mind about how I lived, because old ideas will cause me to drink again like I used to. But Barney bought me one of those encyclopedia-type dictionaries, you know, the Webster's Collegiate, like 1,881 pages. He gave that to me as my newcomer present. It's a really boring story. It's hard to find a plot. He said, here's the deal. You're going to read a page every day. You're going to check in with me. And I'm going to ask you the definition of a word on that page. And if you can't give it to me, I won't be your sponsor. I didn't know he had one of the dictionaries himself. Found out pretty quick he did. And then it occurred to me I could read right out of the dictionary if I wanted to. He didn't tell me I couldn't use it. And that's exactly what I did. He would ask me for a word, and I'd be on that page, and I would give him the dictionary definition. He'd say, good job, kid. And over the course of 1,881 days, I went through every single page of the dictionary. And then we started over again. Ended up with a pretty good vocabulary. Don't use the F word no more from the podium. I don't disgrace or disrespect the AA podium because of the newcomer's life. You see, I don't mean to cast any type of shadow. Here's the deal. The newcomer, that's all they know too. They come from the street. And if they hear me talking like I just came from the street, where's the hope? See, nothing's changed. And they're astute enough to know that. See, the reason I wear this tie is because my sponsor asked me to. Now, there's no judgment there. I'm just talking practicality. My time is really up. I want to tell you, I became a cop sober. I want to mention that. You know, it's really hard to become a police officer when you've been arrested 9 times. And psychiatrically institutionalized 17 times. It's hard to become a cop unless you live in Iowa. There they consider it good experience. I had so much fun chasing drunk drivers. It'd be a 12-step call all the way. They nicknamed me Officer Friendly. I always got assigned to drunks. And you know, I've had the privilege of traveling the world. And I'm so privileged to be an active, giving, sacrificing participant of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's none of my business what you do. And I try not to look at what other people are doing or not doing. I try to pay attention to what my feet are doing. I got smart feet these days. You know what smart feet are? It's like in boot camp when they trained me to go to Vietnam. I had no idea what service I was going to be doing. First, they took me to Great Lakes. Then they took me to Coronado, San Diego, Coronado Island. And then I went to Treasure Island and ended up in Vietnam. I had no idea. But I want you to know something. When crap hits the fan, it's too late to think. And if you don't have smart, disciplined feet, you're in trouble. The time is going to come when I am going to be mentally defenseless against the first drink. And that's when the smart feet that have been trained by my sponsor and by my home group will override my head. Even though my head wants to go over here, my feet will take me over here. How many of you have had that experience with the smart feet? Huh? So, I'll close with this. I want to tell you about my treatment plan. I love this treatment plan. That's why I still have a sponsor. My sponsor's name is Tom Ivester from Southern Pines, North Carolina. He took over when my sponsor Barney passed away. He's sober like 55 or 57 years. The reason I have him for a sponsor is because even though I'm sober 34 years, I have a plan. Anybody else got plans on how they think they ought to do things? Let me tell you how I treat my alcoholism, and my plan comes right in there. At 34 years, I treat loneliness with isolation. You know, you go off into a dark room and think. And I treat anxiety with caffeine and sugar. And I treat depression with country western music. I go off into a little room all by myself. We pull the shades down if there's windows. I light a votive candle to my misery. I play country western music and drink Red Bull. If you're new, I do hope you keep coming back. Thanks.